For my whole life, I've been exposed to Bible stories. I'm sure long before I could read or understand them, people read bits of the Bible and prayed bits of the Bible at me. So it's always been there as a sort of a background theme. So I can't come to the subject of the Bible with a beginner's mind or with a fresh perspective. There's a lot of baggage between me and this book over the years. A lot of the Bible stories and passages that I've been exposed to, I would consider to be Bible light. Little snippets that are not necessarily connected up, but sort of thrown out, like God set his rainbow in the sky, Jesus wept, the Tower of Babel, the prodigal son, the Good Samaritan, and of course, the Passion of Christ, these God-awful stories of torture and persecution. I mean, come on, life is too short for this. And I'm still trying to make sense of it. I look at the Bible, and especially now, the Old Testament or the Hebrew Scriptures, and I think, what am I supposed to do with this? I mean, look, the God who is depicted in the early parts of the Hebrew Scriptures, after the creation bit is grand. God creates something and then looks around, and God saw that it was good, it's a blessing. But then this, you could describe him as almost a psychopath comes along, and he says to Abraham, look, here's your gorgeous child, kill him. Comes to Moses and said, oh, look, we don't like Pharaoh and all his chariots. Let's lure them into the Red Sea so that we can drown them all. And then, even worst of all, he says to Joshua, you must bring the chosen people into the land of Canaan and to make Canaan a fit place for them to live. What are you going to do? Slaughter all the people there. These are dreadful stories, and they really are a challenge to me to make any sense of it. Now, you might well ask the question, why would you try to make sense out of this? Well, I think there are two good reasons for exploring these stories. One is that they're part of our spiritual heritage. Perhaps these stories represent one of the trees we have inherited from the ancestors. They have left us these stories to help us to understand our world and to understand our place in creation. These are not meant, obviously, these stories are not meant to be taken literally. We're not ever told to go and kill a child. We do not drown Egyptians or anyone else that we don't like. And we do not slaughter the people we have to share the world with ever. This is just not the way these stories should be interpreted. The other reason, I think, to take on these stories is that sometimes liberal, free-thinking, equality and justice-minded religious groups cede these stories to the fundamentalist fringe, or the lunatic fringe, if you like. And I don't think we should let the people we are in contention with own these stories. We should say quite firmly, this is our heritage, these are our stories, and we're going to try and make something of them. Now, sometimes inspiration comes in mysterious ways. The idea of God as mentor is borrowed from Jordan Peterson, the controversial Canadian psychologist. On those occasions when I'm ironing, I was at home one day ironing, and I have, generally, when I'm ironing, I enjoy to have Jordan Peterson on YouTube in the background shouting at me. I mean, this says something dreadful about me, that I enjoy being shouted at by him. But he said, Jordan Peterson said, the way to understand these stories is perhaps regard God as a mentor. He wants Abraham, Moses, Joshua to be the best people they could be and to live their best possible life. Now, This sounds a bit strange, but bear with me. Now, I have taken this idea of Jordan Peterson's, and where we go with it next is me. I have stolen his idea, and I'm running with it. He says that Abraham was the son of a prosperous, caring father, and so he didn't have to do anything with his life. So he just sat in his tent, and he ate, and he was... did nothing very much. He was overprotected, mollycoddled perhaps. And it takes the idea of modern youth being slow to grow up and leave home to extremes, because Abraham was 75 when God said to him, "Hey, you, get up. It's time you left home. It's time you became an adult. Get out into the world. Do something. Don't just sit there." So I would say, with great reluctance, Abraham gathered up his wife and his nephew and his bits and pieces and left home. And I am sure this business of leaving home was a complete shock to his system. I mean, can you imagine it? If you have lived a life of comfort where your dad looks after you and all of a sudden you have to face the world and take responsibility for your nephew and your wife and yourself even. Hard times. And of course, Abraham falls at the first hurdle. He meets an Egyptian who is lusting after his wife, and instead of being a reasonable husband or a responsible adult, he says immediately, "Oh, it's my sister, it's fine, you can have her." I mean, wrong answer. This is not what he's meant to do. He's meant to say, "This is my wife. Keep your hands in your pockets and don't even look at her." But nah, can't do that. God has told him that his mission in life is to be the father of a big race of people. Okay, now this gets off to a slow start. There's nothing doing in that department. But he goes off to visit Sodom and Gomorrah, and this is where Abraham has his moment of glory. God comes to him and says, "Oh, these people are dreadful. Sodom and Gomorrah, you can guess what they were up to." And I mean, knowing that it's an Old Testament story, you know what these people were doing and why God was upset with them. He said, "I'm going to destroy them all." And this is where, for the first time in his life, Abraham actually stands up and said, "Come on, you can't do that. If there are 50 just people there, you can't destroy the city." And he wears God down, and eventually God says, "Okay, if you can find one, I won't destroy the towns of Sodom and Gomorrah." It doesn't work, but at least Abraham is standing up to his responsibility. He's doing what he should do. But it doesn't last. His concubine Hagar has a child, and there is domestic disunity. There is war in the tents in the desert, and his more important wife says, "I can't be having this. This woman isn't respecting me. I'm just not having it." And Abraham, instead of saying, "This is my wife, this is my child, granted my junior wife and my less legitimate child, but nonetheless I have a responsibility here," he says, "Grand, we'll abandon them in the desert and let the angel look after them." Wrong response, totally. This is not what he's meant to do. He is meant to stand up and shoulder his responsibility. And then it gets even worse when he has Isaac, and he's delighted with his beloved son, his properly legitimate son by his real wife, and this is wonderful. And then God says, "Sacrifice him, kill him." And again, this is where Abraham really fails his final exam. He says, "Grand, anything you say, certainly, here we go." This is totally not what he's supposed to do. He is supposed to stand up and take responsibility and say, "This is my child, of course I'm going to mind him, of course I'm not going to let anyone touch him. And do you think I am going to touch him after protecting him and looking after him for all these years?" Instead of saying to this powerful God figure, "Take a hike," he says, "Oh, I'll do it." And of course, total failure. Now, when we come to Moses, the situation is really interesting. Moses again comes from a less than ideal family background. Moses was a Hebrew, but because of the family circumstances, he was reared in the court of Pharaoh. And it all got too much for him, so Moses went off out into the desert. But at least Moses was making an effort. He was farming with his father-in-law, which implies that he had a wife and he had children, and he was making a go of life in the desert. But God has a plan. This is too easy for you, Moses, man. You have a job to do, so we're coming to get you. And God appears to Moses in the burning bush and says, "Oi, you need to go back and you need to talk to Pharaoh and you need to get him to release the Hebrews. This is your mission, to break the Hebrews out of jail, get them out of Egypt." And Moses looks at God and said, "Seriously, look at me. Not only do I have bad blood with Pharaoh and the Hebrews, neither side like me, but I have a speech impediment. I can't talk to Pharaoh." And you can imagine what God says. "For heaven's sake, must I come up with all the solutions here? Bring your brother Aaron and go and talk to Pharaoh." So Moses is one of the success stories in the Bible. He does what he's told. He accepts his mission. He said, life is much easier here in the desert with the sheep and the burning bush and his father-in-law to take care of business, and he's having a good time. But he decides, no, he accepts his mission. He accepts the hard task he's been given. He goes to Pharaoh. He eventually persuades Pharaoh to let the people go. I think the story about the drowning of Pharaoh and all his chariots is not, under no circumstances is this to be taken literally, but it's a story of, it elucidates Moses coming to a crossroads. He has to make a decision. On the one hand, is he Egyptian or is he Hebrew? He has to leave his Egyptian heritage behind and become an all-in committed Hebrew. And this is what the story tells us, that at that moment, Moses is no longer divided on himself. He has worked out a way to decide who he is, and he carries on. Now, quite often God is seen and is portrayed as being a bit miserable because he kills off Moses on the edge of the Holy Land. He won't let him carry on in. And this is seen as perhaps an act of cruelty or an act of an unnecessary whim. But I think on the other hand, you could take this story and say, Moses had been given a job. He had been told by God, take the people, release the people from the grip of the Egyptians, take them out of Egypt, mold them into a united band of people, give them rules and regulations and look after them, feed them, clothe them, make sure that they have a worthwhile life. And this is what he has done. That was the end of his mission. He has even gone over and above because he has looked after the succession planning. He has nominated Joshua as his successor. So here we are. Moses is a success story. I think I'll leave Moses there because we could talk about Moses forever. Moses is a totally interesting character. But Joshua, on the other hand, is a much more problematic character, especially in the light of the troubles in the Middle East at the present time. Joshua is told by God, wipe out the people you find in the land of Canaan, the Ais and the three other tribes, and they're all to be wiped out, like kill the whole lot, men, women and children, and even burn crops and kill animals. It's a really, really hideous story. But again, not to be taken literally. I think what God is saying to Joshua is, do the job you were given. His job is to settle the people in the promised land. And when Joshua is mentioned around the death of Moses and the opening chapter of the book of Joshua, the advice to Joshua is always, be strong and be resolute. So Joshua is in a slightly awkward position because he has been elected as Moses' heir. He gets his position not because he's necessarily the best person for the job, although he probably was, but he doesn't have to prove himself. He doesn't have to do anything. His mission is landed into his lap without any preparation much, except being Moses' deputy. So he has to prove himself. And I think where Joshua really proves himself is he's told to be resolute. He is told to, this is hard work, setting up a new land, settling formerly nomadic people as settled people, arranging things so that they can continue and so that they can live in some semblance of peace. It takes hard work and resolution, and Joshua does this. And we're not told much about Joshua, except that after he died, he was buried in the Promised Land and his son was buried with him. So we assume that he had family relationships. So if we're going to take these stories on board and do something with them, what are we supposed to make with these stories? I think the first thing is that your mission often, or your purpose in life is often dropped in your lap. It manifests itself. You don't always get to choose. What you're expected to deal with and what you're expected to do often comes to you without you having to go looking for it. And then we're all expected to make a go of our lives, do something with what we've been given. Don't sit in the tent and eat peeled grapes and drink wine and do nothing else. Get out there and do something. Jordan Peterson says, we were made to walk uphill. We're designed to carry heavy loads. Accept the responsibility of our mission. The other thing that I think comes across from these stories is our human relationships are very important. We can't do it on our own. You can overcome background prejudice. We all have baggage from one source or another, but if we value the people we've been given and do our best to have good relationships with the people around us. Now, this is much harder than having a decent relationship with God, because we can park God in a box, or we can leave him on the table in church and go away without him until next Sunday again. Whereas the people in our lives and the people we have to inhabit the earth with, I mean, as soon as you go out of the door of the church, there are going to be people in the street or there are people here. So it's building solid, good relationships where we nurture the people around us. We don't want to be the sort of people who are like Abraham's father, who overprotect him. But then we don't want to be a parent like Abraham, who doesn't protect his child at all, who just says it's fine, like that, let the angel in the desert do the heavy lifting. So our challenge is to take these stories, accept them as a gift from the ancestors. They're our spiritual heritage, and make something positive out of them, and not allow people who have less benign religious feelings turn them into something really monstrous. So take your Bible and run with it. And in the words of the old hymn, adventure boldly and explore.